Okay, thank you. I also am glad to be able to present some of my work. With such a short time, I sort of, for this talk, I decided to just present big picture ideas and fine details. We can go over it one-on-one if you have any questions. So this is work with my advisor, E. Lee. And I think we were supposed to include this, but I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, so as many of you know, despite all the continuing efforts in cancer continues to be a problem in public health. And so at the turn of the century, the National Cancer Institute commissioned a group to identify what are some of the methods that need to be developed for new cancer research, so for this new data that they're getting. And so this group, they identified that figuring out which methods to analyze patterns and trends in cancer mortality would be a great way to sort of start the new century. And so this is sort of essentially what the data set looks like. And here I present the age-adjusted cancer death rates for males from 1930 to 2005. So what researchers started to notice was some of the three deadliest killers, lung cancer, prostate, and colon cancer, around the 1990s, it started to decrease. And so the scientific question that we're trying to answer is, well, is this just random? Did that happen randomly, or is there an underlying factor that is resulting in this observed correlation? Okay, so you can translate these trends into a correlation matrix. So looking at those trends, you can easily transform that problem into a correlation matrix problem. And I'll try to explain why we need new methodology in this new area. And so consider this toy example. So here we have a toy example where our data comes from a multivariate normal, mean zero, covariance equal to the identity. So, and I'm considering here the case where I have five random variables. So I have, you can think of them as five cancer sites, and I'm simulating from this covariance structure where I'm saying there's absolutely nothing going on. There's complete independence among them. I take a sample of 1,000 sample points from this data, and I can construct the correlation matrix. And this is the correlation matrix that I got. So there's two things that we can note. First, the off-diagonal elements are very close to zero, which is ideally what we should expect. You know, those things tell us the pairwise correlations between any two given cancer sites. And then, so that's good. It tells us, yeah, that, you know, we're very close to the truth. And the sample eigenvalues are the other thing that we can look at. So those are the eigenvalues of this matrix. And if you look at those are very close to one, which is what we should expect because the population eigenvalues, the eigenvalues of this, of the covariance matrix are equal to one. So this is exactly what we should expect to see. And so the null hypothesis or the goal that we want to test is this idea that the correlation matrix is equal to identity because this is what we want to observe or this is what we want to test. So if we do not reject this null hypothesis, we say complete independence among these five random variables, among these five cancer sites. So that's great. There's nothing going on. And so how do we test this null hypothesis? Well, there's been a lot of work already that's been done. Most of it's in principal components and factor analysis. And those, for those settings, there's a lot of work already, an extensive amount of work that's been done. And then they always assume a small, that you have a small fixed P and you have a large sample size. But what happens when P is not fixed and is large relative to N? So for the SEER data set that I'm working with, we have 59 cancer sites that we're interested in. And only 36 years of data. So here we have P is greater than N. What happens then? So let's go back to this correlation matrix problem. Consider again the same setting where we're sampling for multivariate normal, mean zero, and the sigma equal to the identity. And in this case, now P is greater than N. If you look at the correlation matrix, the off-diagonal elements are a little bit misleading. They're telling us that there are correlations among the variables when in reality we know that there shouldn't be. And the second thing that we note is that the sample eigenvalues are very spread out. So instead of being very close to one, they're spread out. And so this is a huge problem when it comes to the typical methodology that I presented before, or the one that assumes it's fixed P and P is smaller than N. So again, our goal here is still to test that the correlation matrix is equal to the identity, and we have poor statistical techniques. So the techniques are limited. And so we decided to approach this problem through the eyes of random matrix theory. So the idea here is we can still analyze a correlation matrix even when you have p greater than n. And the idea here is we're going to consider an ensemble of correlation. We're going to consider an ensemble of correlation matrices that have a correlation equal to the identity. You can construct a distribution of the eigenvalues based on that ensemble, and then we can use our one sample to compare it to that distribution of eigenvalues, where we assume that we're sampling from these random matrices that have a correlation matrix equal to the identity. And so if our sample is significantly deviates from what we expect from random matrix theory prediction, then that's going to tell us that there's some system-specific non-random property in the system, telling us more about the underlying cancer interactions. So that's sort of the big problem. There's a lot of work that we did and a lot of math, but I'm going to exclude some of that based on time. And so the way we relate eigenvalues and the correlation matrix is through a factor model. So you can consider the second model here, where we have X is linearly dependent on a few underlying factors, and those factors have loadings that are, so if you use an eigenvalue decomposition, those factor loadings are actually the eigenvalues of the correlation matrix and the eigenvectors of the correlation matrix. Okay, so here, this is where how we're going to test that null hypothesis. I'm going to look at the eigenvalues of my correlation matrix, and I'm going to look specifically at the first one. I'm going to look at the first one because the way that these eigenvalues are set up is that they're ordered. They're ordered in decreasing order. So lambda 1 is the largest eigenvalue. The second largest is lambda 2. And so the idea here, the proposal test that we're going to use, we're going to look at the first eigenvalue. And if this one is not significantly different than random matrix theory prediction, then neither will the rest. Okay, so if I want to test this null hypothesis, I'm going to look at the largest eigenvalue. I can build a distribution of the largest eigenvalue based on random matrix theory prediction. And then from there, I can look at the next ones if there is something going on. Okay, so again, our test here is we want to test this null hypothesis that the correlation is equal to the identity. And so we get the largest eigenvalue. And then under random matrix theory prediction, I can construct an estimated mean of what should I expect what should I expect for the largest eigenvalue to be for the mean of that, and also I can also standardize that. And so this test statistic that we propose follows the Tracy-Witham distribution of law order 1. And so I don't present any of the formulas there, but we do present that in the paper. So here we reject. So suppose then that we do not reject this null hypothesis. Then we say, then factor analysis is not useful and everything is just completely independent. These cancer sites are completely independent in terms of their mortality. But what if we do reject this null hypothesis? Then that's telling me that, well, there's at least one significant factor that is relating these correlations to each other. So there's at least one significant factor, but are there more than one? And so this is what we considered, and so we developed a sequential rescaling procedure where so normally when you're looking at how many number of factors you should keep, you look at proportion explained or you look at a scree plot. But when p is greater than n, those things are actually a little bit misleading. So what we decided to do is we looked at the, if we did reject this null hypothesis, we got the largest eigenvalue. So we took the effect of the first factor, we removed it from our data, and then we constructed this new correlation matrix that has the effect of the first factor removed. And then we construct the new correlation matrix, we rescale it so it can continue to have the same properties as a correlation matrix. And then we test the second eigenvalue. And then if that second eigenvalue is significant, we do the exact same thing. We remove that effect and we go on to the third one, and we keep doing that over and over until it's no longer significant. Of course, the problem is that you're using the same data multiple times, and so we have this multiple testing issue. And what we propose is an alpha spending function where at each test you spend a certain amount of alpha, and this will help control the type 1 error. So we apply this to the SEER data, and so the SEER data can be obtained online. It actually comes from the National Center for Health Statistics. And again, so we have a data available to us from 1969 to 2005 for 59 cancer sites. So using this testing procedure, so we have then the estimated values for the eigenvalues, and then the p-value is the p-value that results from that test that we propose. And so each time we do this test, we also have to compare it to some sort of level of alpha. And so that third column is the alpha spending function at each point, at each test, how much we're testing, and then our decision. So based on our procedure, we identified three significant factors. So clearly there is some correlation, so there's some significant correlation in this correlation matrix, and we're going to try to explain those through three underlying factors. That's what we decided based on this procedure. And so when you're estimating or when you're trying to interpret factors, you normally interpret them in the context of their loadings. And so here we have the three factors that we established from this procedure on this SEER data set. So this is looking still at the cancer mortality. And so the first factor loads heavily on lung, prostate, and colon. Then the third factor are actually cancer sites that are dealing with the head and neck cancers. So this is actually still an ongoing work. We're working with National Cancer Institute researchers to identify, to sort of find a way to interpret these factors. From what we're starting to notice is that factor one quite possibly might be something dealing with screening. So there are some, this could possibly be telling us how screening affects some sort of cancers. The third factor seems to be something related to alcohol and tobacco use when they're used jointly. There's a lot of research going on about how head and neck cancers and other cancers are affected by the joint use of tobacco and alcohol. So we describe methodology that you can use to actually analyze correlation matrices. I didn't specify in my slides, but you can use the exact same methodology for when you have p is smaller than n. So it can be used in any type of setting. So when you have p greater than n, we definitely recommend this procedure, but when you have p less than n, this also works and provides similar results to other things. All right, thank you.